Okay, last week in the last verse of chapter 13, it said, and they sang a hymn and went out. So it was the conclusion of the Passover Supper. Then in chapter 18, that scoots ahead now, five chapters. In chapter 18 and in verse 1, it says, and they crossed the brook Kidron. Now the brook Kidron is just right down the hill, 100 yards or so, 200 yards, from where they would have gone out. So here we have a situation, not a problem, but a situation we need to think about just for a moment. And that is that in chapter 18, that's when they went across the brook and went up into the garden, in chapter 18. Now today we're in chapter 14. 14, 15, 16, 17, all of those chapters contain material that happened either in the upper room while they were having the Passover supper, or it happened in some other place when they got up and left the room and went some other place, and then these events happen. Now, it doesn't make a dime's worth of difference. John is not a writer who tries to keep things in chronological order. So, in my opinion, which is an opinion, all of these things that we're going to be studying today, chapter 14, then chapter 15, then chapter 16, then chapter 17, all of these things also happened in the upper room when they were partaking of the Lord's Supper. Now, in chapter 18, we know that they go down, cross that little brook, up into the garden, and there then is when the betrayal is going to be taking place. So today, we're in chapter 14. Now, chapter 14, 15, 16, 17 all contain material that Jesus teaches his disciples about things they need to know concerning his relationship with God. And so it's making a big impact, a big impression upon these people about really who he actually is. Let us think now for just a moment that this is the last night that he's spending on this earth. These are the last instructions he will give. So what are the last instructions that he gives before he goes into the garden, is betrayed, taken off by the Roman army, and finally put to death? It now becomes intense. He is getting ready to teach them one thing after another thing right here at the very end, because these will be his final teachings. Now, this merely says he either gave these teachings in the upper room or somewhere else when he stepped out, they stepped in another room. But now, keep in mind, this is the last day that we have here. We have this Passover, which takes place in chapters 14 through 17. It's our Thursday, but it's their Friday. And we've used this chart before, and we've seen that we use Roman time from midnight to midnight, but they use Jewish time from evening to evening, 6 o'clock to 6 o'clock. So on Thursday night at 6 o'clock, it would be their beginning of Friday. Then on down the line, it goes this way. So this is why you'll hear people say, well, was this Thursday or Friday? When Jesus went to the garden and he was betrayed, was it on Thursday or Friday? It's on Thursday, according to our calendar we have, but it was on Friday, according to the Jewish calendar. No big deal, but that's just one of the facts of life. Now, in chapter 14, his last night alive, he will become very definite in declaring his deity. This now is when he's going to really become definite. Now, he already has made many statements about his deity before this. Back in chapter 5, he made statements and they said, well, he's making himself equal with God. And that is true. He said, if you know me, you would know my Father also. Wow. He said, then you shall know that I am He. Another wow. But it's not having the impact on these disciples that He wants it to have. When He says, I am He, there's only one He that the Jews knew anything about, and that's the Messiah that is coming. I am He. But they had that concept of something else. When the Messiah comes, He will be of a different character somehow or another. But Jesus has already made these statements. He said, before Abraham was born, I am. I existed. Abraham was born 2,000 years before Jesus. But He said, even before he was born, I existed. And that got them upset. How could that be? Well, it's only because He was deity. He says, the Father is in me, and I in the Father. He that believeth on me believeth not on me, but on Him who sent me. Jesus has made all these statements before. That's all I'm saying. He's made these statements, but it hasn't penetrated the mind of the apostles yet. Now then, on this last night, He is going to try to make a penetration. He's going to be talking about things to tell them in such direct terms that they can't misunderstand it. So this is a very serious conversation that He's having. Now, in chapter 14, He's going to make statements like, you know Him and have seen Him. What He's going to be referring to is God the Father. You know Him and you have seen Him. Meaning Jesus. He said, he that hath seen me hath seen the Father. Now these are big statements. These are statements of where He's just hitting them over the head with a hammer, showing them He is deity. He's trying to make the penetration. So far He has said, I am, these five times, I guess it really would be. He has said back in chapter 6, 8, 10, I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the door. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and life. Now then today, He's going to say, I am the way and the truth and the life. We'll talk about that. There'll be one more, I am. In John 15, I am the true vine. So there's seven times Jesus is going to be making a statement, I am. And then He says something about Himself that no human being could possibly say. So five times so far He's made this statement. Today He'll make it again. So now, today we start in chapter 14, verse 1. And as we start here, He's going to say, let not your heart be troubled. But let's remember what He has just told them in these last classes. In chapter 13, He has told them that that one of them would betray Him. He's going to be betrayed. He's told them that Peter would deny Him that very night. He's told them that they all would be offended and they would all stumble. And that they would all fall away from Him. None of them would stand with Him this very night. Now that's going to take place when the Roman government comes out and when Peter tries to defend him, but it doesn't work out. And finally, all of them fled. All the apostles ran away, just like it was prophesied in the Old Testament, that they would all flee from Him. So He said, all of you are going to be offended. He has told them that He would be leaving and they couldn't follow Him. He said, no, I'm going to be going, but you can't follow me. Now you see, this is a provocative statement. What does that mean? Where are you going that I can't go? What country could you go into that I can't go into? anywhere Jesus could go, they could also go. But they can't. What does he mean when he says this? They would be wanderers and subject to persecution. They wouldn't like to hear this, but they've already heard it. Now, in other words, as we go out of chapter 13 and all the things he told them, big changes were coming in their lives, and they didn't like any of it because it didn't look like any of it was good. It looked like everything that was going to happen to them was just falling apart. They had this great, grandiose idea of this kingdom being great with Jesus in the kingdom, and they had this concept of how it would be. And now then, tonight, he has told them these things, and it's just crumbling. So that's what I want us to think about as we go into chapter 14. Their lives are just crumbling around them. They do not know what is going to happen. Our Lord is leaving. Our Lord is going away. He will not take us with him. We can't follow where he is. We're all going to be offended in him and leave him. Things are bad. So that's the way we open chapter 14. That's the reason in chapter 14, he opens the chapter and the statement there in telling them, let not your heart be troubled. What would you think if your whole life was disintegrating around you? Everything that you have been working for, that is literally true of them, everything you've been working for, everything you've been trying to accomplish, every hope that you have, all of a sudden, today, has been pulled out from under you. And you have none of it. And you came to me and said, Lowell, I want to get some advice. What can I do? Everything is gone. Everything I had hoped for, it's all gone. And I said, let not your heart be troubled. What would you think? I tell you not to be upset. Don't be shook up. All's going to happen is you're losing everything that you've ever hoped to have. But let not your heart be troubled. Now that's how he's starting this chapter. And that's what he's going to try to show them. He's going to try to give them hope and let them see, no, your world is not falling apart. In fact, even though all of these things are going to happen to you that I said, you're going to find out it's all for the better. It'll be better for you. It'll be better for me. And it'll be better for the world. Everything is going to turn out better. That's what chapter 14 is going to be about. So he said, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. Don't have any doubts. Your world is crumbling. Do you believe in God? Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. Now I put out there, in my words, adobes and dwelling places. This word mansions is not a good word to give us the idea we have. When we think of a mansion, if you talk about somebody living in a mansion, you're thinking about some great, ostentatious. You're thinking about something really big. This word is just a dwelling place, an apartment, wherever people dwell. Where do people dwell? They dwell in houses. They dwell in apartments. They dwell in various places, and this word is just the word that means a physical dwelling place. That's what it means. So in my Father's house in heaven are many, many places to live. Many, many dwelling places. We don't have any idea what they look like. It's going to be a spiritual realm. And people have asked me a million questions, I guess, about what it will be like when you get to heaven. And my answer is, I don't have the slightest concept. I don't know why we will need a dwelling place. I don't know this. I don't know that. But he does use these things that we do know down here. He says there's going to be dwelling places. The streets will be made of gold. There'll be no night. There won't be any sun. You'll have life. You'll have light all the time. There won't be any unhappiness. And there'll be food 24 hours a day. And he goes on and on trying to show us how wonderful it would be. Well, here he says, in my Father's mansion or house are many mansions. There are many places up there for you guys. So you're coming. Now, if it were not so, I would not have told you. If that wasn't so, if there wasn't dwelling places for you, I wouldn't have told you there are. I go to prepare a place for you. Now again, you say, what does that mean? I don't know. It means he's going up there to prepare the dwelling places for these men. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Now, if you look at this through the eyes of Jesus, he knows what he's talking about. If you look at it through the eyes of the apostles, they're all confused. They know that he's leaving, going somewhere they can't go. And he's explaining to them that I'm going to go where you can't go. I'm going to go in my Father's house, and there are plenty of dwelling places there. And I'm going to go and prepare your dwelling places. And then I will come back and get you and take you with me. Now that's what they've been wanting to know. Where are you going? Why can't we follow? And he said, I'll come back and I'll get you and I'll take you with me in there. And you'll be where I am. Where could that be? So try to think in their terms, how that their mind is so, so confused. Now you might say, why is Jesus doing this? Because he's going to do it all the way through chapter 14. All the way through chapter 14, he's going to make statements that provoke you to think. This is a teaching mechanism. This is the way, oftentimes, teachers who know that their students aren't really paying attention to them because they've been talking just regular language. In order to get the student to really listen, they'll come out with some outlandish thing. Whether it's math, whether it's something else, it'll be some outlandish statement and that the students will think, wait a minute, how can that be here? And then teacher got their attention. He's going to start taking them, walking through them a step at a time and teaching them that's the way it's going to be. So that's what Jesus is doing. Jesus is, as I said, hitting them over the head with a hammer. He's getting their attention. He's going to teach them something. He said, and where I go, you know, and you know the way. Now, this is another odd statement. I've got down there, would you have been satisfied with this answer if you didn't know and you knew you didn't know? And so you're wanting to know, Lord, where are you? And he said, well, he first told him, he said, where I go, you can't go. And then he says, now, where I go, you can't go, but I'll come back and I'll get you and I'll take you. And then he says, and where I go, you know. You do know where I'm going. And the way, you also know. Oh boy. They didn't have the slightest idea of where he was going. They didn't have the slightest idea of how to get there. This is confusing. Now let me back up. Let me just make a little statement here. They did know. Jesus is telling the truth. They did know, but they didn't know that they knew. That's the whole key, see? Now, the whole key is this, but he's making this statement so that he'll get their attention. Now, Thomas immediately comes to the forefront. He said, "Lord, we do not know. We do not know where you're going. How can we know the way?" You see, they're just total frustration. Total frustration. And then Jesus said to him, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." Now there is the big statement. There is the truth. He's been playing with their minds in order to get them prepared to see this. "You know the way." "No, we don't." "Well, I am the way, the truth, and the life." Now, a minute ago I said they knew, but they didn't know. They knew that Jesus was the only way. They knew that without him there was no hope. They knew this. They already knew it. But they didn't know it. They hadn't put it together. They hadn't comprehended it. They didn't see the whole truth. They were frustrated. But Jesus is telling them now, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Now, I guess that if we wanted to try to analyze that statement, it would take us hours and hours on end to say, here's what that statement means. So let's just try to visualize and see, can we determine what that really means? When he says, "I am the way." Now look, I'm getting ready to go somewhere and you don't know where it is. And you can't know where it is. I'm going to go somewhere where you can't go. But I want you to know when I go, I'll come back and I'll take you with me and you will be able to go. Now I want to know, who's the way? What would you be waiting on? If somebody came up to you and said, "Now, Lowell is gone, let's go follow him." What would you say? "No, we don't know where he's going." "Well, are we going to end up where Lowell goes?" "Yeah, yeah." "How are we going to get there?" "He's the way. He will tell us. He is it. We have to depend on him. We don't know where he is. I may be down in Mexico in some great resort. You don't know. You have no idea. But you know wherever I have gone to prepare this wonderful place, you can't come. You don't know. But I'm going to come back and get you, and I'll take you with me." Now, how do you know the way? What would you do if somebody comes up and says, "Let's try to determine what to do"? What would be your advice? You say, "Let's wait on Lowell." "Well, where are we going?" "I don't know. Lowell will tell us." "When will we get there?" "I don't know, but Lowell will tell us." You would understand. The only thing you could do is sit there and wait on a message from me, because I'm the only guy that knows where, when, and how you're going. So I'm the way. You're going to do it my way, or you don't do it anyway. Now, I am the truth. So as I'm getting ready to leave you, I'm telling you I am the truth. What I tell you is not a lie. What I tell you is not a deceit. What I tell you, you can absolutely depend on as the actual fact. Now, what are the facts of the case? The fact of the case that I'm leaving you. You can't go where I go. You don't even know where I'm going. But I know where I'm going. And one of these days you will follow me, because I'm coming back and getting you. Whatever I tell you, it is the truth. I am the truth and the life. I am the one that will give you life to be able to do these things. So I will see that in my case, I will see that you have health. I will see that you have life so you can go to this resort and enjoy it with me for a few years. But with Jesus, I am the life. I will come and get you, and you will be with me forever. So, disciples, you 12 who do not understand anything that's going on, you're totally frustrated because it looks like everything has fallen apart. I want you to know in your frustrations, I'm leaving you, but you know what to do. You know where I'm. You know the way, and you know how to get there. Somebody says, we don't know. Somebody else would raise their hand and say, oh yeah, we do know. We know how to get there because we wait on Lowell. He's the only one that knows, and he'll be back and get us. That's what Jesus was saying. That's what he was telling them, that I will be back and I will get you. Let's take another illustration. This is so big. Let's suppose that right now the lights went off. People come running in and says the building's on fire. And there's only one way out of this building. Not only is the building on fire, but the people that set it on fire threw a sack of rattlesnakes out. And we've got to wade through those rattlesnakes. And so here we sit. Well, there could be total pandemonium. Jump up. There's only one way out. Most of us would be burned to death here in the building. But suppose that I said, stop. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Stop. You follow me. You just get in line, follow me. Don't you worry. I will lead you out of this. You wouldn't have any idea. Do you go out that door? There may be six rattlesnakes waiting on you if you do. Where do you go? How do you get out of here? So, I am the way. Follow me. So I go out this door. I go around here. I go down there. Make a little loop. Finally go out the front door. Everybody who follows me will get out of the building. Those who don't follow me are going to die of snake bite or fire. I think we can see that. You could say he is the way. He is the truth. He knows what's out there. He is the life. He's the only chance we have of living. If we follow him, we will live. That's what Jesus is saying. Spiritual sense. So what he's getting down to, working down to, what he's going to tell us is that we must totally depend on him, totally find out what his commandments are, and totally obey him. That's where he's headed. That's what he's going to tell us. But he's getting them ready for this great truth that's there. Now, he drops another bomb in this conversation. He said, now, if you had known me, you would have known my Father also. And from now on, you know him and have seen him. Now, he's saying this to these guys who have known him for 3 years on a daily basis. Now, if you had known me, they knew him. Looking at it from their side, we know you. But if you knew me, if you had known me, you would have known my Father also. Wait a minute. Now, Jesus, you're saying if we had known you, you would have known, we would also have known the Father also. Yeah. And from now on, you know him and have seen him. So from this day forth, apostles, you know him and you have seen him. Oh, boy. Looking at it from their viewpoint. Had they seen the Father? No. Had they been taught in the law of Moses that you can't see the Father and live? Yes. Had they asked him, had they tried to see. Yeah. But had they seen him? No. No, and now then he says, if you had known me, you would have known my Father. And from now on, you will know him because you have seen him. You have seen the Father. There, well, Philip says, Lord, he's trying to cut right to it. Lord, quit playing games. Lord, show us the Father, and it is sufficient for us. Instead of telling us all of these things that boggle our mind, show us the Father. Just open up the heavens and let us see the Father, close it up, and then we'll not ask any more. That'll be sufficient. Show us the Father. Then Jesus said to him, have I been with you so long, and yet you have not known me, Philip? He who has seen me has seen the Father. There's the bomb. Look, I've been with you for 3 years, but you really didn't know who I was. I have told you over and over and over again, but you still don't comprehend who I am. If you had known me, you would have known the Father. So now let's put it straight. Listen carefully, apostles. He who has seen me has seen the Father. If you have seen me, you've seen the Father. Now that would be the same as saying, has anybody ever seen Lowell's brother? Somebody said, well, I haven't seen him there, but I'll tell you one thing. If you've seen Lowell, you've seen his brother. We know this happening all the time, see? If you've seen Lowell, you've seen his brother. We know what that means. That means if my brother walked in here, he would act and talk like I do. That you would say, yeah, that Lowell and his brother are just alike. That's what Jesus is saying. Now he's saying, now you have seen the Father by seeing me. Whatever you have seen me do is what the Father would have done had he been in my shoes. Whatever you have heard me teach is what the Father would have taught had he been in my shoes. If you want to know anything about the Father and what the Father would do if, then you think back about what I did when I was in that situation. And that's what the Father would do. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. We both think alike. We both act alike. We are both alike. We have the same thoughts. We have the same emotions. We have the same desires. We are alike. You cannot find one little difference between me and my brother. Boy, that'd be a big statement. But that's what Jesus is saying. You cannot find one little difference between me and our God. So I want you to know, when you've seen me, you have seen the Father. Do you see how he is making this statement without any reservations at all? So how can you say, show us the Father? Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father in me? The words that I speak unto you, I do not speak of my own authority, but the Father who dwells in me does the works. Believe me that I am in the Father and the Father in me, or else believe me for the sake of the works himself. He said, look, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Now, when you hear my words, did you think they were mine? No, they came from the Father. When you saw my works, what I've done, did you think that's my works? No, that comes from the Father. The Father and I are one. When you've seen me, you have seen the Father. So, this is why your heart should not be troubled. There's where we pick up our story with Jesus next week.